And we will now move on to LD 1844, an act to provide for special fees for certain aquaculture lease applications and to amend other provisions in the laws governing aquaculture leases, presented by Representative McCrae. And I know there are good things in the works. And so, Lynn, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, before I start, I want to say that the committee had asked that I invite a Department of Environmental Protection representative. If there's someone in the attendee room that is from the department, if you could raise your hand, so if the committee wants to bring you over, we know. I did not hear back from the department, so I don't know if DEP sent someone over. So to the bill, this bill does authorize the department to assess special fees on applications when the size, uniqueness, complexity, or other factors lead the department to determine that the normal fees for applications need to be adjusted. This language was modeled on language in the department in Title 38, and I did do a comparison, and it is virtually identical. It also, so the bill does three things. It applies special fees. It also permits the department to obtain an emergency aquaculture license. Currently, emergency aquaculture licenses are only permitted for someone who already has a license. The department talked about if there was a widespread issue and that affected multiple aquaculture vendors, that they each would need to get a license, an emergency license. And this language in the bill would allow the department to get a license in that, in an emergency, so that they could better manage the overall large scale emergency situation. So they're talking about widespread closures when the health and safety of the shellfish are threatened. The other thing this bill does is it allows the department to issue a lease when it is a land-based aquaculture license for more than 1 year. So the bill does three things. It's the emergency aquaculture license for the department, the ability to issue a land-based aquaculture lease for more than 1 year, and the special fee provision. And it was the special fee provision of this bill that received the most testimony, both for and against. The department, as I said, modeled this after what DEP has done. The allows for this assessment when the application is well beyond the bounds. It needs to be communicated to the applicant. I see Representative Hutchins' hand is raised, so I'm wondering if you would like me to pause.
No, I'll finish your analysis and then we'll go to questions.
Okay, thank you. The fee, the department can assess the fee at or prior to the time when they determine the application is complete. The fee is capped at $250,000, and it requires billing on a quarterly basis, and it is based on actual staff time. The Maine Aquaculture Association testified against this bill. The Protect Maine Fishing Heritage Foundation testified neither for nor against. The opponents talked about the criteria being vague, that size, uniqueness, complexity, and other factors, that was vague. Difficult to assess. There was discussion that this type of special fee may lead opponents to increase the controversy surrounding aquaculture application. And then there was some discussion about whether or not this is the appropriate service license model for this type of industry. And I will defer to people in the industry to talk more about the service model and whether this is appropriate or not. Again, there were many individuals who submitted written testimony in opposition to this bill. The notes that I would make is that during the public hearing, the department requested additional language be added to the bill with respect to suspended culture and clarifying what that is. They also, there was a discussion about questions raised, and I do not know how DEP handles this. There were questions raised about whether or not the special fee should be reduced in the amount equal to what a normal average regular fee application would cost. That question to me goes to basically ask, is there such a thing as an average, normal, or regular fee with respect to aquaculture applications? And the department would be the ones to answer that. Again, there was a request for DEP to be present, and I haven't stopped to raise my, to look at my chat, but I don't see any raised hands, so I do not think DEP is present to discuss what their experience was. And then my final comment is that Chair McCrate has proposed two amendments to the bill. One I included in my bill analysis, and that would limit the special fee to aquaculture lease, aquaculture applications that involve discharge into the waters of the state. So again, that would restrict the special fees to a certain type of aquaculture application. And the other proposed amendment, which I did not include in my bill analysis, is that this special fee would be repealed as of February 15th of 2025. And I do not see Chair McCrate shaking her head that I got that wrong, so I think I got that right. Any questions? No, I did not get it right.
Okay. No, all right. Hold on. We'll work on that. It looks like, I don't know how to pronounce it. Sorry. Livesay. Okay. Is the representative from DEP. And so I've invited him in, but I'm not ready for him to speak yet. So we're good. So be prepared in a few minutes. And Representative Hutchins had a question. We'll do that. We got a bunch of stuff to present from the department sponsor and stuff. So if you want to ask it anyway, Representative Hutchins, or go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern is on this on the special fee, and maybe what Representative McCree has offered is going to satisfy that. But I remember many years ago, as a member of this committee, we had a piece of legislation passed, and this sounds a lot like it, that made anyone that was within view of a aquaculture site, it made them someone that was eligible as a person to be able to object to the site, in other words. At the time, Jock vetoed that bill, Governor McKernan, because of that feature, because what we found was happening was one attorney from that belonged to somebody with big pockets was helping make it very easy for anyone in the view to extend the permit applications to the point where it was ridiculous. So like I said, McKernan vetoed it. A few years later, the same thing passed again. And I, at that time, talked with Governor King, and he agreed that it probably wasn't a very good idea. And he sent it back to committee, and we buried it in committee. So this sounds a lot like that. And I'm afraid that if we make it too easy, you know, make it so that it is so expensive, we may discourage good programs from going forward. And so that's really my concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative McCrate, you want to answer some of that and talk about your amendment and ideas?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And thanks, Representative Hutchins. I agree with you. That's not at all what we want to see happen. The public process has evolved over time, but still does not allow what you're concerned about having happen. And honestly, it never occurred to me that this would be misused. So that's what the amendment's about, to because, you know, we are careful about taxpayer dollars. If a lease is way over the top, and the only ones that that's been true of, and it isn't all the time, would be ones with discharge. So we thought if we limited it to discharge, it would still have to be a determination made by the commissioner at the start, before things progress. The other thing, as Lynn said, was to sunset it so we could see, and if there's a problem, of course, the legislature can always put in new legislation to change something that we're doing, but to sunset it puts it on our radar to make sure that it gets our attention again. And the third, and this wasn't an error, Lynn, I didn't mean to say that you'd forgotten something, but after we talked, there was a suggestion to take out the word solely.
Alone.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. The way it shows up is in section, in 4B under section 2, the commissioner shall make such a designation at or prior to the time of the department determines that the application is complete, and may not base such a designation solely on the likelihood of extensive public controversy. To take out the word solely there. Still, it's a public controversy cannot be the reason to increase cost, but it seemed like it made it a little clearer to take out solely.
Okay.
So my intent is not to impede aquaculture, and I appreciate everybody's concern about it because it hadn't occurred to me. And I think these changes, I hope, would fix that for people. And again, the sunset makes it clear that we can, future legislature will have it reviewed and can do it. I suggested February 2025. If that seems too long, we could adjust that. But those are the amendments.
All right. And Lynn, that's all stuff you've heard before, right? So do you have this clear in your head about what's going on? Okay, good.
I do, thank you.
All right, and so the part about discharge means that it's not the ones that are floating on rafts offshore that people are gonna have objections to the view anyway. These would be onshore facilities that have to be cited by a whole bunch of permits to get to it anyway. That's the kind of discharge I think you're talking about. Yeah, okay, and so the sunset provision and strike the solely. That's the changes, folks. It's up to you to decide whether that seems like it covers the objections. It seems like it to me, Representative Crafts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still, you know, this came up in the public hearing. I have a hard time without defining the complexity, uniqueness, and size within the bill. I hear that the discharge specifies it a bit more, but maybe, yeah, I would like to hear from other folks and maybe Director Gilbert more about that.
Sure.
And Senator DEP is here.
Yes, and I just wanted to get the questions lined up for whoever we bring in to answer while they're up. Representative Fockingham.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to make a motion to pass as amended with those amendments.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Any second? No. Representative Hepler, I saw you first seconded the motion, and now discussion. And as part of discussion, I'd like to invite Mr. Livesey in, so he can correct my pronunciation of his name, if nothing else. And then the department briefly, and then we'll take a vote. Or, I mean, it doesn't have to be brief. It's time for discussion. All right, let's start with the department. Director Gilbert, anything to say?
Thank you, Senator Marimont. Yes, I just wanted to speak a little bit to Representative Kraft's question. I do appreciate the desire to have a little bit more clarity around those terms, but I think the reality is they are impossible to define in a way that would be useful in this regard. It's kind of hard to say what is complexity when the complexity is something that you can't even anticipate what it will be. And that's really the nature of the applications we're trying to get at with this. It's things we haven't seen before in Maine, things that we have no experience dealing with. And that's why they take so much of our staff time kind of coming up to speed on the processing of those types of applications. I did talk with Mr. Livesay yesterday, and I was hoping that both at the Land Use Regulatory Commission and at DEP, he has some experience with actually trying to use that kind of authority from those agencies' perspective, and perhaps kind of just a little bit of information about how that has worked might allay some of the concerns about those terms.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Livesay is here. Welcome.
Good morning, Senator Marimont. And I pronounce it Livesay, but there are different people in the family who pronounce it different ways, believe it or not. So I won't take any offense to any pronunciation you decide you want to use.
Oh, thank you.
I'm really here just to answer questions that you folks might have about special fees. It's a program that we have at the department, and we've had it for, I don't know when it started, quite frankly, but it's been around for a while. I've been at the department I'm the Bureau Director for the Bureau of Land Resources. And so in that capacity, responsible for much of the development permitting in Maine. We don't permit air emissions in our Bureau. We don't permit waste discharges. That's the Water Bureau and landfills, but pretty much everything else is in our bailiwick. So I've been in this role for 3 years, and for seven or so years, I was the Director of Land Use Planning Commission, where we had a very comparable provision allowing for the collection of special fees for larger scale projects. So different administrations, different agencies, and a comparable program. I quickly pulled together some data with help from folks last night, just to give you a sense of how common the use of special fees, how common that is. And going back to 2019, that's sort of the data that I got. The departments had, I think, 19 special fee projects. So that's 19 projects over 13 years. And to put that in perspective, we issued over 900 individual licenses last year. That was a high year. So if you want to say use a 700 or 800 permit a year average, and then less than one of those, a little more than one, but less than two of those per year is special fee. It's a very, very finite number of permit applications that end up going the special fee route. Of those 19, 14 of them were wind power projects. That's due, quite frankly, to the complexity of permitting those types of projects. They cover a lot of ground. There are lots of natural resource impacts that go into the review of those projects. There are also some technical assistance that we commonly look to outside contractors to help us with, for instance, evaluating the sound reports that developers put together. And the noise assessments are highly complex. And the department, through the special fee program, recovers the cost of effectively a peer review. And this is sort of valuable. You know, if you're a neighbor, what are you going to be hearing from a wind power project? So 14 of the 19 were wind. And then, you know, we've had one aquaculture facility. We had, at the time, what was the largest proposed solar project was another. Everybody's favorite transmission line corridor was another one that was a special fee project. So that's to give you a sense of the type, but it's pretty rare. And I guess I heard some questions, and it's a good one. You know, what are the criteria that are used beyond what you've seen in the bill language before you to identify whether or not a project is special fee? And one of the, and the determination is made at the pre-application phase. So it's before the application is accepted as complete for processing. And in a meeting with applicants, the project managers and the folks that are going to be working directly on it, you're sort of scoping out with the applicant, what are the impacts that we might be concerned about here? What are the topics that we're going to be getting into? And it doesn't take very much experience from a project manager to know that this is sort of comparable to the hundreds of other projects we review, or this is going to be much, much different. And even in the absence of sort of quantitative criteria, it's certainly not a process that gets used often, and it's pretty easy to figure out which projects are the big ones and which ones are just the other projects that come along. We don't use the potential for public controversy. If that were the case, we'd have a lot of special fee for peers. You know, the one we get peers and everybody likes their peer, but not their neighbor's peer. So those don't go the special fee route. And if you guys have any solution to that problem for me with your marine experience, we would appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Livesay. Now we do have a question for you from Representative Kraft.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Livesay. Of those 19 projects over the last 13 years, do you know how many of those applications proceeded or went through to licensure?
All of them. Well, actually, there's one that's on the list. I'm not 100% positive about it. It predates my time. It's Diamond Cove, and I have some just, I live down in that neck of the woods, the Casco Bay area. So I have some idea what that project was, and I didn't remember there was a fire out there. So I don't know where that fire occurred in the course of the permitting process. But that one aside, they all went through the permitting process, all these wind power projects. And so it's not been a, I'm not aware of a special fee designation being a barrier, if that's what you're wondering.
Thank you.
Representative Hepler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Livesay. I'm going to use my boatyard analogy. If we build a boat that's like the first boat is like super complex, a customer wants it, and it's going to cost a lot of money, and so we charge accordingly. The next person comes along and wants the exact same boat. I would feel hard pressed to, because we already have the molds and whatnot, I'd be hard pressed to charge that person the same fee. Does that make sense in terms of like, if you see the same project a second time, the first one's complex, the second one's not?
There's a yes and a no to that. Let me explain why. So the first time that one sees a project, there's certainly going to be a learning curve. But at least in the department, so when I say department, I'm talking about my department, DEP, which is probably confusing. I probably ought to say DEP. So at the DEP, even when we see a new type of project, so I think actually aquaculture and the Nordic Aqua Farms project, which was turned out to be quite controversial. And so from our perspective, it's a new technology that's being proposed, sort of large scale onshore aquaculture, but the components of the project, the types of impacts that we're reviewing they're not specific to aquaculture. For example, that project has a very large footprint. It's, you know, 30 acres or so, and there's a ton of cut and fill that goes into that project. I mean, there's a lot of excavation that was approved to get down to a suitable soil layer that can withstand the weight of the facility. And so while that's a big footprint, that's not a unique type of impact that the department hasn't considered. Another big piece of that project dealt with the water withdrawal. They're using a lot of fresh water. It's coming from multiple sources, both municipal groundwater and surface water. And so, you know, we certainly have dealt with water withdrawals before. Poland Spring, for example, uses, you know, spring water, groundwater. So it's a new technology or a new type of development. So maybe we're combining a number of the factors that we look at. but it's the same. It's the same types of impact. So I don't know that there was so much of a learning curve really associated with that. It's just a big project. And you know, we've permitted two other land-based aquaculture facilities not using Special B, and they really didn't have the same type of permitting complexity to them. And that was something that we could scope out and were able to recognize at the pre-application phase. So if you look at Whole Oceans in Bucksport, you know, they're on a developed property already. There's already a lot of the infrastructure in place for water withdrawal, for example. Discharge pipes were already there from the mill. And so it was just a much more straightforward permitting process. And then, you know, we were up in Jonesport for Kingfish, and that's a greenfield site, but it didn't have the same types of complexities, and, you know, especially the groundwater withdrawal. I think the wetland impacts were quite a bit less. It was a lot less complex to permit. And then, you know, 14 of the projects were wind. So we're getting pretty good at permitting wind projects. But they're still complicated. And although it's wind power, the nature of the impact with respect to any given project, it really is location dependent. So in one location, you know, migratory birds could be a really big concern. And we work with IFNW on that. In another, there could be a threatened or endangered species that we're concerned about based on the habitat and the place where it's located. So it's most wind has some complexity, but we are getting better. I've got a draft wind power permit right now, and it was designated a special fee, and they're going to pay less than their regular application fee, believe it or not. Let me take that back. We bill quarterly, and so through but when they ran the numbers for me last night, they were lower than the application fee. There may be another quarter's worth of bills to go out, but the point being, you know, that one was more straightforward maybe than we anticipated at the pre-application phase. And, you know, there have been a couple projects that have come in at a lower rate, actually, compared to the application fee.
Thank you. Representative Hutchins.
Thank you, Mr. My question, I think, would be about clean energy corridor. You gave that as an example, and maybe that boys that supports kind of what I was saying. The clean energy corridor had all of its permits, and did this make it so much longer that it gave time for the process, which, you know, has now stopped it at least for a while?
Yeah, I would not suggest that there's a correlation between permitting timeline and whether or not a project is or isn't special fee. And so I'll use that project as an example. That's obviously a project that's consumed a tremendous amount of department staff time over multiple years. I mean, there was a week-long public hearing. There was a six-day of public hearing that was added. We've had, I think, three different permits appealed in conjunction with that project. There was the commissioner, on her own accord, initiated a proceeding to suspend or revoke the license, and that had a public hearing that came with it. And regardless of whether CMP and NECEC Transmission LLC were reimbursing the department for staff time and for you know, hearing space when back before COVID, when we were meeting in public spaces, you know, regardless of whether or not this was a special fee project, all of that same process would have occurred. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
And Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you again, Mr. Livesay. Does the legislation with the DEP, the process for special fees include any appeal process?
There's language. I think it's similar to what you see before you hear, where there is some appeal fees can be passed along, if you will, at that point, if they've been issued a permit to the permittee. And we've done that in some instances. Well, we typically do that with projects that we review that are appealed, but not all the fees are passed on. So, for example, This frustrated me, but the court in one of our recent appeals would not accept an electronic record for the official court documents. So although the permitting process was one that was done electronically, and we put together a PDF of the 10 or 20 or I don't know how many 100,000 pages, we had to print all of that for the court and index it. And so that printing fee, for example, can be recovered and was recovered through the special fee process. We don't, as a matter of practice, recover the cost of, Attorney General's office time, for example, although the department pays for that.
Mr. Chair, may I follow
up? Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I think to clarify, I meant if the applicant wanted to appeal the use of the special fee process, is there any way for them to do that?
They would appeal that to the commissioner. I've not gone through that process. I've never had an applicant that's appealed a special fee either here or at the Land Use Planning Commission.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hepler.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. This actually isn't a question for Mr. Livesay, but about the amendment. Is this the time to ask that?
A question about the amendment? Sure. Is this time for the committee to ask anything of anyone?
Okay. So thank you. So I know I seconded this, but I just want to make sure what I seconded. So are we now the only projects that can be subject to this special fee are land-based ones?
Unless there's a different definition of discharge, it would seem the amendment doesn't. Lynn's shaking her head. I'm trying to pull up the amendment again. And go ahead, Lynn, if you want to answer that, if you're the best person to answer that right now.
So Representative Hepler, I did not hear exactly what you said. This applies to applications involving discharge into waters of the state. That's how it's drafted in the bill amendment.
So if it's already in the water, it's not discharging to the water. All right, Representative Hepler, follow up.
Yeah, I guess that's my question. So anything, so this only apply, this would not apply to kelp farms in the water or oyster farms that are in Robin Hood Cove, for instance, or anything in the Damariscotta River. Is that?
Mr. Chair, I would suggest perhaps the department can best answer that question.
Sounds good. Director?
Thank you, Senator Mearmont. Just to clarify, I just don't want there to be any confusion about land-based aquaculture licenses. So land-based aquaculture requires a license from us. This proposal is for aquaculture leases. The department's original proposal was that potentially any aquaculture lease application could be subject to special fees. Representative McCrate's amendment would limit that to lease applications with a discharge. So that would not include shellfish or seaweed applications, neither of those types of leases have a discharge associated with them.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for Mr. Livesay, or can we let him go? Unless you're wanting to hang around, Mr. Livesay.
Well, thank you for having me this morning, and good luck.
Thank you. Okay, thanks. Representative Hutchins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The overboard, the discharge, I should say, not overboard, but the discharge from aquaculture sites, sometimes correct me if I'm wrong, but just circulating water from outside a net pen and then pumping the water that the fish are living in after it's filtered through so that the waste is taken care of, excuse me, that's considered a discharge, I believe, and that's an enormous discharge because it's a 24 hour a day circulation. So is that discharge something that would raise this extra fee?
Director?
Thank you, Representative Hutchins. So So FinFish lease applications are discharge lease applications.
Ah, great. Look how we clear things up here. So we're not just talking about onshore. And in fact, we're not talking about onshore at all because they're not subject to this. So we're back to just the hydrology of the water moving through these pens is called discharge because it eliminates waste? No. What am I not clear on here?
Sorry, Senator Marimont, I'm trying to explain that FinFish leases by their nature because of the food provided and the waste from the fish are inherently discharge lease applications. And that is unlike a shellfish or a seaweed lease. There's no food provided by the leaseholder into the lease.
Good. So okay.
Those are the attributes that make a FinFish lease a discharge lease application.
Great. So we're talking about something that we know and what applies, but also what isn't included. So this is good. Thank you. Representative Hutchins' hand was just still up, and Representative Crafts.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Gilbert, so shellfish and seaweed are not included in this. FinFish are. Can you just define, are there any other categories that fall within the discharge?
Not to my knowledge. Again, the attribute that makes the FinFish lease applications discharge leases is the provision of the food into the lease site. I'll kind of pause to let any of our aquaculture staff that may be listening, if there's something that I'm not thinking of, I will come back to you. But in our experience, the only type of application that we have dealt with to date that is a discharge, I believe, are FinFish lease applications.
Thank you. And we do have Sebastian Bell in the listening, and if the committee doesn't object to him answering the question, I'll bring him in for a minute. Okay. I see no objections. Welcome, Mr. Bell. Go ahead and answer that, please.
Thank you, Senator Mont. And I believe that Deirdre is correct on that interpretation. I also would like to thank Representative McCrae and the department for working through this issue. And I think Representative McCrae's amendment is a reasonable solution, particularly dropping the word solely. I will say that I do think this is going to put the department in a place where opponents are going to intentionally generate opposition to applications in order to try and invoke these special fees. The one question I have, and maybe Deirdre, this is for you or for the obviously DEP is left, but DEP has this in their statutes now. If this goes into the DMR statutes, how will the two departments resolve the charges and make sure that an application is not double charged? In other words, charged by the DEP as well as the DMR. How will that be worked out from a fee point of view? Because technically, I believe if it's in both department statutes, you could potentially run into a situation where both departments were charging you a special fee.
All right, we don't usually let spectators ask questions, but I think that may be on someone else's mind here too. So go ahead, Director, if you have an answer for that one.
Yes, thank you, Senator Marimont. So I think what would happen potentially, if the applicant needed permits from both agencies and both agencies chose to assess special fees, obviously we would be charging for our respective work on those permits. I am confident that we would coordinate in a way that would ensure one applicant isn't being charged for the same work by two agencies. I think that there is the potential, again, that one project could be subject to special fees by both agencies, but I think in most instances, one or the other agency would be leading that permitting, and an applicant would only be charged for the work that is done in support of that permit by that agency.
Thank you. Great, that's answered. And any other questions from the committee? We are in the discussion mode. There's been a motion made, ought to pass as amended. We've made the amendment pretty clear. We've been asked and answered questions on it. Looks like we're ready for a vote now. When you are ready, Linda.
I am ready. And again, starting with you, Senator Miramont.
Yes.
Representative McCright.
Yes.
Senator Maxman. She may have stepped away. I'll come back. Representative Alley is not here. Senator Rosen is not here. Representative Falkingham. Representative Falkingham. Okay. Representative Bloom is not here. Representative Hepler.
Yes.
Representative McDonald. She is still not back. Representative Crafts.
No.
Representative Hutchins.
That's a no.
Representative Stanley. Representative Thorne.
Nay.
And I see Representative Maxman is back. Your vote, ma'am?
No.
Okay, so we have 3 in favor, 4 opposed.
We have Representative Stanley.
I'd like to vote as well.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I called on you and you weren't there. And your vote, ma'am?
No.
You know, okay. Is that everybody so far? Okay, so there's 3 in favor, that makes 5 against, and 4 opposed.
4 missing, 4 absent.
Yes, I'm sorry, okay. 4 absent.
Yep, so with 3 having voted in favor, 5 opposed, and 4 being absent, the motion fails at this point. And there was there any other discussion while we still are open in this bill with that motion failing? Any other motions? Any other anything? Representative McCrae?
I'm not sure because we have 4 absent. It's hard to know how this is going to go. So can we? I do have an alternative. But I don't know if we want to wait until others have voted, or I don't know.
Yeah, we can do that. We can wait and bring this back up. Well, maybe people come on and we'll have them vote when they come on while we're working other bills. And if not, we'll kick it down the road. Representative Thorne.
I'm just curious. I'm not sure. I just asked the question. Is it possible for somebody to make a motion and then not vote on the motion?
Make the motion and not vote on it. You mean, let's say you moved a certain bill, but then you voted against it when the vote came up. Yes, you can do that.
No, if I don't no. vote on it. If I make a motion and then I don't vote.
Mr. Chair, I believe he's referring to the fact that Representative Falkingham made the motion, ought to pass as amended, but he was absent at the vote.
I see.
I don't know the answer to the question. I just know the question.
I'm just learning because I didn't know if that negated the vote or that's something that he can catch up with later, and that's fine.
It is. You have 2 days to vote, even if you made the motion. It doesn't matter that way, but ultimately, does he have to vote? I'm not really sure.
Oh, yeah, that was just more of a point of process than anything.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you for doing that. Representative Falkingham, we're still discussing 1844. We have, we can let you record your vote now. On that, yeah. With the amendment, did you hear the amendment?
Yay.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I've been listening to you guys. I just had my camera off because I had a couple other things going on.
Sure. Okay, we're at 4 or 5. I know we won't get Representative Alley anytime soon. I'm not sure about the others, how what they were doing as far as coming back, but we're going to give them a chance to anyway. So right now the vote stands 4 in favor, 5 opposed, 3 absent. And we're going to
4 and 4.
It's 4. Yes.
What's that?
4 and 4.
4 absent.
I believe the vote is 4 and 5. Isn't that correct, Linda?
Yes, it's 4 in favor, 5 opposed, and then 4 absent. I think I might have been counting Representative Falkingham, even though he wasn't speaking.
Thank you. Four, five, and four. Yes, Lynn.
I just want to ask those who voted against the motion, ought to pass as amended, is your vote and ought not to pass?
Anyone or all of you?
If you're...
I'll defer to Representative Hutchins on that.
Yes, it's not not to pass.
I would agree with Representative Hutchins.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today.
All right. Okay. We're going to move on to